My name is Zuhair Ahmed, and I've been here for 12 years now. I was born in Somalia, Burqa, North Somalia, called Somaliland now, and I migrated to Syria. So I've stayed in Syria for a couple of years and then came here. And here, before, as with all the Somalis, we first arrived in Houston, Texas, and then right after that we came here to Minnesota. Went to Sanford Middle School, then to Roosevelt High School, went to the U, then I'm at Concordia right now. Honestly, I don't remember much of my childhood in Somalia because when the Civil War broke, I was only 5 years, so I don't remember much. The only part I remember was my little brother's death. That was the only part of it that really resonated with me, and how he died. But then we went to Syria and lived there for a couple of more years, and about 8 years. And that's where I kind of went to school and, had a lot more memory in my childhood than Somalia. Then came here when I was 13, so I've kind of lived here through my teenage life, and I think those years are the most important years than any of the other years where I lived in Syria or Somalia. Syria, there weren't many Somalis around, and so the first school I went to was Sanford Middle School. It was really populated by a lot of Somali kids, and then I saw Somali teachers, and I appreciated because, of course, I didn't know how to speak English and the ELL classes, and just seeing, other Somali students to talk to. And it was a shock because I didn't expect I would see that many Somalis, but then I appreciated later on. And then went to Roosevelt, which was the same case too. A lot of Somali students, a lot of Somali teachers, and it's there. Then I got involved with the community. Then I got involved with at a school level. So I started getting involved in student activities, extracurricular activities, and then I got introduced to the community. The Somali community, that is, of course. I was part of the Somali Student Association, so that was kind of the biggest one. And then there were other student groups that had Somali students in them, but they were not solely for the Somali students, like Student Council, Unity Group. I lost track of them. National Honor Society. There were like a bunch of them. Like senior night when I was getting recognition, or the senior night recognition, I was like by the pinch, literally, because I was getting recognized for all the student activities. So I was like really, really involved in so many of them. I can't even count them all or remember them, if you will. In high school, my activism was really highly within the school activities. There's not much of community, a direct community involvement. But when I came into the U, and the location of the University of Minnesota, of course, helped me, close to the Cedar Riverside neighborhood. I got introduced to community leaders, and I was more aware of community activities that were going on, and that's how I became really more involved in whatever that was going on within the community. One of the first things I got involved in was this organization that was called at that time Minnesota Somali Student Union, and it was to unite all the Somali students in different colleges. And another organization that was off of the Minnesota Somali Student Union was North America Somali Student Union. So I heavily became involved in those student groups, and that led to me getting involved with the community because a lot of the members or leaders on those organizations were older kind of generation, older men. So they were also involved in other community-related activities, and they introduced me to other community organizations that existed in the community at that time. So I got involved in those, and then later on, about 2, 3 years, I was introduced to KFAI, where I used to volunteer with Hussein Samatar, who had show on KFAI on Tuesdays. At the same time, a friend of mine also hosted a show on Sundays. So I was introduced to KFAI because I was told oftentimes I had radio personalities, or I was good at that. So that's how I then transitioned to KFAI, and later, a year later, to Echo. I was told by my friend who was in the programming community of KFAI at that time that there was a spot that was going to be open here for a programming, and they were specifically looking at show from the East African community. And I was like, great. While I really liked volunteering with Hussein Samatar, but there were a lot more issues that were really specific to the youth and other issues that I felt like Somali media in general was not touching upon, that I had a passion for. So I was like, you know what, I might as well want to apply for my own show. And my friend Magan helped me with that. So we applied together, and I unfortunately had to leave the country. So I was kind of on my own doing it, and applied for the show, got the slot, and that's how Somali Community Link started. And ever since then, I've been trying to, it has been hard being student and working and having family engagements and stuff like that and having social life. It was hard to balance, but I guess every time I wanted to quit, my main goal was, oh, you have issues to tackle. You have things to talk about in the community. You have issues and solutions to discuss and other things that were happening, like current community affairs or any newsworthy stuff to talk about, or even the success stories or anything that's good. One that kind of that I kept on repeatedly tackled or covered was definitely the youth issues, and I felt like it was not being signified for a really long time until bigger issues came, like violence or the gang violence, followed by Al-Shabaab, followed by the sex trafficking right now. So definitely that was my main focus. And when I was covering it for the first 2 years of my show, I felt like people, my listeners specifically, were really bored with me, given the fact that they were all, you know, they were older generation, and they felt like there could be better things I could be covering, such as current affairs in Somalia or political related stuff. So I was unpopular then with my topic choices, but I felt like they were really important. Another one that I kind of covered was kind of health topics, again important, but then was somewhat boring to some of the listeners. Women specific related shows, etc. So those topics that you oftentimes heard being covered by the community, by the Somali media in general, that I felt like it was important for someone to talk. Most memorable show is, I have a lot of them, but definitely let's see, recent ones were a show that I was talking about autism, and it was about what it is about, and I brought some parents. See, I covered autism more than once, like I think so many times that I can't even count. And each time I was trying to bring an expert to educate the community about it. But one time I was like, you know what, why not bring parents with autistic children? So I brought parents that were very active in the community, who kind of figured it all out. And I thought they would be great to help their fellow parents to kind of walk them through it. And I brought them, and the phones were flooded because a lot of people were frustrated and had questions about. They were frustrated. They weren't sure if their kid had autism or not. Yes, ECHO stands for Emergency Community Health Outreach. It started to be this organization that was somewhat government affiliated, where they would get grants, but now they're a nonprofit organization. And what they try to do is outreach to communities whose English is not their first language, such as the Somali, Spanish, Hmong, etc. And where I come in is, I have been a host for them for the past almost 4 years, and topics that are most of the time chosen by people like Minnesota Department of Health and other healthcare related organizations, or safety. We also cover topics that are related to safety in case of emergency preparedness and stuff like that. So the topic is choosing based on whatever the need is, or information that otherwise those communities won't get from mainstream media. So we host a monthly show through TBT, TBT Minnesota, Twin Cities Public Television Minnesota, shows such as cancer, such as what would you do if there was tornado warning, or let's say if there's a fire, or children's dental health, It's a really wide variety of topics here that are covered, and it's really important work because I feel like the Echo Show is actually even more popular than my radio show because every time I walk into a shopping center, Somali shopping center, or a place where the community, there are at least one or two people that have watched the show, and they're like, "Oh, we saw you on TV," or "Have I seen you somewhere?" And I'm like, "Probably Echo TV." So a lot of people watch it, a lot of people benefit from it, and I even benefit from it every time I'm at those meetings prepping for the show or doing the actual show. I'm learning one or two things. So it's really important for, and not everyone speaks English here, especially for the older generation, especially for mothers. So it's really important that there is a show that's about important health topics and, emergency preparedness and safety that's in your own language that you can, that you can know the do's and don'ts. Being, of course, student, you need to dedicate your whole life to school, and especially with the majors I've been taking. I've done social sciences and sciences, pre-med, trying to go to medical school. So, of course, you can imagine the load of classes that is. And, of course, sometimes I need to work, so I'll be working, and then family obligations. So definitely how to balance that time. And that's kind of what I feel like been giving me the wrinkles already because I hardly get any sleep. Like maximum 4 hours. I'm happy if I get 4 hours a night. And then with that comes the responsibilities because ever since I've been doing the show, I feel like somewhat I've became responsible for a lot of community related stuff, especially when it comes to the mainstream media and when it comes to the mainstream community. I was oftentimes invited to places to talk about my work here with the community, or oftentimes I'm contacted by mainstream media because they wanted to connect through the community, and they wanted to do it through my show. They wanted me to talk about specific topics that came up, or so it and I'm trying to really help the community, and I'm trying to do my services for the community, but sometimes it just becomes hard that it stands in the way of my own personal life. Well, definitely being young helps because you have so much energy, and I know I'm going to run out soon. I'm only getting older, but definitely what gives me really strength is when I get a feedback from either the community or from anyone, basically. A good feedback. It only makes me, you have no idea how many times I wanted to quit, how many times I wanted to quit the show, how many times I wanted to quit all everything that I get, how many times I just want to shut down my email because I get like 100 emails a day. And I'm like, do I really have to do this? How? Why am I responsible for all of this? But then every time I get the strength because, I know down deep inside what I'm doing is really important to the community. And whenever and somehow I get feedbacks from the community members, from the mainstream community, and that keeps me going because I know what I'm doing is important and it's somewhat impacting people's life, even if it's like one person, and that's what keeps me going. Well, my relationship being, well, I view myself to be somewhat both, Somali, but then as Minnesotan as it gets. I work with them. I go to school with them. I'm one of them. When I'm at school, I can hardly differentiate between the two. So I feel like especially with my work at the KFAI, I get to learn a lot of things for my own good, which is, basically the view of people that are not necessarily Somali, of the Somali community, view of my community, of the others. And just, I feel like I live in the best of both worlds, and I really enjoy it. Definitely love the state, but I want to get away for a couple of years for school so I can be focused. But I feel like Minnesota is really special, as a lot of people say, in a very unique way. It's a really diverse area, that especially in the metro area in the Twin Cities, and I just love every piece of it. I guess I've spent all of my teenage life here and now my adulthood, and I feel like it's the only thing I know, basically. It's weird for a nomad like me who lived in, like, born in Somalia, then lived in Syria, then here, to say that, but I just feel like somewhat whenever I go out of the state, either like out of the whole country, but even or even to another state, I get homesick in like 2 days, and when I come back, so there got to be something magical about this state, and I feel like yeah, it's definitely a magical state. It is home. It is home. I can never see myself living somewhere else.
Feel that Minnesota has been welcoming
Yes. I feel like compared to a lot of other states, it has been, but then always there's room for improvement. And I feel like there are good people and bad people, but that's just how it is. And I also feel like that it's our responsibility first and foremost to educate the ignorant ones about us. In school, I go to very small private school, and I am like one of the very few colored ones, and like one of the two or three Muslims in my whole school right now. And I get asked a lot of ignorant questions like, "Do you have hair?" or, "Are you oppressed?" or "Can you do that?" And I honestly don't mind it. I don't get offended by it. A lot of people would, but I just feel like it's ignorance, and then it's my role here to, get rid of that ignorance in their mind and educate them. Yeah, I do. Yep. Although I feel like sometimes there could be segregations, but then with me personally, I feel like I am connected, but I've seen others that are somewhat segregated based on, I guess, ethnicity. Somali mosques are for Somalis, and we'd hardly see people of other nationalities, and same as other masjids. So segregated in that way. I think it's a comfort thing, honestly. I don't think it has a lot to do with, racism or anything like that. I think it's just a comfort thing. Everyone's comfortable, and sometimes you have to go out of your comfort zone, and that might not be like an option for a lot of people. A lot of people just don't like to go out of their comfort zone.
Do you see young people sort of also lapsing into that
No, I think for younger people they're different. There are ones, but for majority of them, I think they're different. They are already out of their comfort zone, so it doesn't really matter.
How would you say your relationship with your
Very good. My personal neighbor was really good. He knows about a lot about our religion. During Ramadan, he knocks our door and gets some sambus. That's his favorite part of the whole month, the sambus, and he knows Eid, and we have a really good relationship with him.
What do you think makes that relationship work?
Definitely acting on the part of our religion that tells us to be aware of our neighbor, know our neighbor, and care for our neighbor. And I think that's one of the first things my mom did when we first moved in, knocked on my neighbor's house and introduced herself, and he introduced himself. So just having a casual relationship, and just, so you can be there for each other at a time of need. I feel like right now, although, it's a really tough time for Muslims in Minnesota, I somehow feel good about the future, because every new wave of immigrants in this country went through what we're going through. It's not really specific and special to us. Of course, when things are happening with you, they're specific and special to you. Going again back to history, the Italians went through this, the Jews went through this. So we're not really the only ones that's going through this. It's just America and its history of giving a hard time to the newer comers. So soon, inshallah, we're gonna, prosper, and it's gonna be history that we remember and tell our kids, I guess. I really would think there could be a time where maybe mainstream would fund the mosques like they fund the church, and maybe recognize the work that they do, or the work that they could be doing to better people's lives in terms of humanitarian work. For the community, in terms of community-based work that can help and assist the community in every need, like feed my starving children, things like that. Although some, mosques do those on their own, but again, they're really limited. So.
What do you think is the experience of immigrants, especially Muslim immigrants, growing up in Venezuela?
I think the best part of it is the fact that little girls, when they're growing up, and this is the most appealing to me, when they grow up, they can wear their traditional clothing, they can wear hijab and never be judged or looked at weird. I feel like if they were in different states, they would have to fit in and wear, let's say, jeans and not cover their hair and stuff like that. And they would be giving a hard time by their peers because they would be asking them so many questions. But in here, you don't have to worry about that because the mainstream community already knows who you are and they already know these cultures. Another important thing is, in schools, even as young as in elementary school, when it's during prayer or Friday prayer, students are allowed to go and pray. So even our school system is supporting and helping them with their religion, even as young as elementary school. So I feel like that's really unique situation, and you can't find that elsewhere.
Were students at Roosevelt, when you went to high school, were they allowed to pray?
Yep. Matter of fact, we used to be sent to the church right across from Roosevelt. There's a Roosevelt church, so right across from our school. So we'll go there during the month of Ramadan. During lunchtime, we were allowed to stay in the main auditorium and lecture each other about religion and hold a prayer there. During class time, if the Asr prayer is falls into one of your class schedules, you're excused to go and pray. So the accommodation part of it, it's really important.
How do you maintain religion and Muslim identity?
In a lot of ways, definitely clothing is a big part of it because it reminds me of my uniqueness. I was actually having this discussion with one of my classmates yesterday. And, I told her, yes, it is a religion thing, but it is my identity, and it makes me unique from you, not that I'm trying to distinguish myself from you, but it's just, it gives you that sense of uniqueness, and everyone loves to be unique, of course. So that's one way, and of course, the five-time prayer a day, every time I'm at the library and in the middle of, our study session with my classmates, I get up and tell them I gotta go pray, and I go to my little area and I pray, and they're not doing that. It reminds me of my identity and who I am. It keeps me going, and just I think those in general. First and foremost, I am a Muslim, and other things come in second, like my color, my ethnicity, everything else comes in second. So religion definitely is first for me.